This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for August 17th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a new report shows how rising housing costs in Colorado are making it hard for teachers to live where they work. We'll hear from one of the authors. The Dairy Arts Center will host a celebration of West African dance, drumming, and storytelling this weekend. We'll get a preview. And then, herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Then it's the Hightower Lowdown. On today's A Public Affair, the president and CEO of the Boulder Chamber of Commerce will be my guest. We'll discuss wages and rising cost of living in the state's most expensive non-resort city. Then at 9:30, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first a look at the headlines with KGNU's Hannah Stewart.
Today is the first day back to school for elementary school students in the Boulder Valley and St. Vrain Valley school districts. Remaining students from those districts will start their school year either tomorrow or Friday. Classes in Poudre Valley School District began yesterday. The first day of Denver Public Schools, and for CU Boulder, is August 22nd. Colorado's Front Range has seen plenty of rain recently, leading to a lifting of at least a couple of fire bans. KGNU's Kiara Damari has more.
Western Boulder County's fire restrictions has been lifted as of Tuesday. The fire restrictions have been in place since June. The fire ban at the Arapahoe and Roosevelt National Forest has been lifted for the first time since May. Authorities say these national forests are no longer experiencing drought conditions after recent rains. Fire restrictions range from 1 to 5. The national parks are ranked as a level 1 fire restriction, which allows for campfires in supervised areas such as campgrounds. According to a press release, fuel moisture levels that are measured in both small vegetation, grasses, and shrubs, and in large vegetation like the standing and falling trees, are a big part of the scaling process. Colorado is expected to keep experiencing flash flood levels of rain. At the regional level, the scale is ranked at a 2, and at the national level is at a 3. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
The U.S. Department of Education will forgive nearly $4 billion in student loan debt from people who attended ITT technical institutes. More than 2,400 Coloradans will benefit from the loan forgiveness program. For more on this story, let's hear from KGNU's Luis Licon.
Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser led a bipartisan coalition with 24 other states to file a borrow defense application. Weiser said in a press release that when hardworking Coloradans sought to further their education, ITT convinced them to take out substantial loans by offering empty promises of future employment that would allegedly allow them to pay down their debt. The Department of Education found evidence that ITT Technical misrepresented the value of its education, saying that students who attended ITT would graduate with a high-paying job. ITT operated its for-profit school from 2005 to 2016. Borrowers struggling with student debt could file a complaint through the Attorney General's office with the student loan ombudsperson. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
Last night, the primary election results for Wyoming came in. Incumbent Representative Liz Cheney lost the Republican nomination to challenger Harriet Hagman with around 40,000 votes compared to Hagman's 85,000. Harriet Hagman, who Trump officially endorsed, is an attorney who specializes in natural resources and water litigation. Because of her anti-conservation record, she's been deemed the Wicked Witch of the West, a name that, according to ABC News, she embraces. She previously ran, unsuccessfully, for governor in 2018. She said she decided to run this year because she believed Cheney betrayed Wyoming and the country. According to Politico, Trump showed up at her home in Wyoming last year to plan her campaign as a Cheney takedown. Trump endorsed at least 42 candidates in recent primary elections. Many of his endorsements are now running in upcoming general elections. Hagman will compete with Democratic opponent Lynette Grable in November's general election. Grable only received about 3,000 votes. Also in Wyoming last night, incumbent Republican Governor Mark Gordon won a race against Brent Behan. Gordon will go up against Democratic challenger Teresa Livingston in November. Next Monday, the city of Boulder will be hosting its last of three sessions in the summer webinar series, Climate Conversation. City staff members from the Climate Initiatives Department will lead the conversation on natural climate solutions, which is a focus of a Cool Boulder campaign. Cool Boulder is a government-led, community-wide effort to cool the city, foster biodiversity, and absorb carbon through natural climate solutions. It includes pollinator pathways, where diverse plants support cooling temperatures, and connected canopies, a program aimed at maintaining and improving the health of the existing tree canopy. More information about both Cool Boulder and the Climate Conversation series can be found at the city website. Today in Boulder, expect sunny and humid weather. We have a high of 83 degrees and a low of 58. Be prepared for clouds throughout the rest of the week and rain on Sunday. Outside the Boulder studio, it's 59 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Hannah Stewart.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Students and teachers are heading back to classrooms. Keeping schools staffed, from cafeteria workers to instructors, is an ongoing challenge. And high costs of living in regions like the Front Range are a huge issue. A new data study by the Keystone Policy Center shows that wage hikes alone may not be enough to let teachers live in the neighborhoods where they work. Joining me now live is Van Scholes, Senior Policy Director of the Keystone Policy Center. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
The study we're discussing today is called Home Ownership for Colorado Teachers, Affording the American Dream. Start off by painting the broad strokes of what your study found.
Yeah, we decided to take a look at salaries and also the cost of owning a house and purchasing a house in the school districts in which teachers teach. We know that recruiting and retaining great teachers is essential to having effective public education. And we know that we had known that salaries have been going up. We also know that the cost of a house has been going up dramatically in many parts of Colorado. And we wanted to get a much better sense of, sort of in details around what those relationships are and how things vary, and also begin to understand if there are problems, what we could do about them.
And your study found that in the year between 2020 and 2021, housing prices in Colorado increased by 20%. Are those prices still rising, or are there any signs of relief?
Yeah, we're not real estate experts. And so, and these things obviously are changing, you know, week to week and month to month with interest rates rising. And it seems as if at least things are cooling off a bit. But because of the interest rates rising and also the costs of real estate in most places, that we haven't seen a dramatic change from where the data was in 2021.
And housing prices also affect families who send their students to these schools. What is it? What does a school district do when, one, they can't find someone to fill a position, and two, there aren't enough students?
Yeah, it's a real challenge on the staffing front. I mean, it means that folks have to commute long distances, which has an impact on their job performance. It also means often that folks who maybe have been working in that school district are moving into a place where they may want to have a family, settle in, move from renting to owning, are forced to move to other places where they may be able to more easily afford a home. And so what happens is that helps drive the churn of staff in particular school districts.
So what does this mean for the quality of education that teachers can provide, and what are the longer term impacts on society?
Right. Well, we're very concerned that this will have a huge negative impact on the quality of teaching and who can teach in particular parts of the state. We point out that salaries have risen. Obviously, the more that you are paid, the more purchasing power it comes in terms of home ownership. The problem in many parts of Colorado, as is the case in many parts of America, is the cost of housing has risen much faster than salaries have. And so in many parts of Colorado, there may only be a couple of percent of housing stock that's even potentially available to you. Boulder, for example, Boulder has one of the highest average salaries in the state. It's around $85,000 a year. But the share of homes that salary might enable you to purchase is only 16%, which is a relatively small percentage.
And you mentioned that the relatively high salary for Boulder teachers, that doesn't translate to all school districts. Now, we've talked about the Front Range. What about in these mountain districts that are also incredibly expensive?
Right. Yeah. Boulder is on the high side of salary. And so most salaries throughout the rest of Colorado are significantly lower. And in some parts of Colorado, in the 30s or 40,000 range. And so in some of those places, for instance, on the Eastern Plains, the cost of home ownership is much less. And so, in fact, you may have more purchasing power in other parts of Colorado, even though the salaries are much lower. But in many parts of the state, for instance, Summit County, the salaries are not as high as Boulder, and the cost of housing is substantially higher. And so there's only 4% of homes that are even potentially available to folks. And we didn't look at what's on the market. And so those numbers are much smaller when you look at actually what's on the market, you know, in any given month.
And of course, I have to ask, how does the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, or TABOR, fit into all of this?
Yeah, it's a good question. It definitely has an impact on the amount to support public education and in turn to support salaries. So that definitely has an impact. We would say, though, that this problem goes far beyond TABOR and far beyond school districts' ability to raise taxes. It has a lot to do with the availability of housing and the cost of housing. And so that's why or at least that's one of the things that we've discovered in our analysis. And we're neither weighing in on TABOR being a huge problem or it being helpful, but we will say that the difference between what's being spent on salaries is huge across the state. And also the cost of housing is huge across the state. And again, I would say, even if we were able to lift TABOR, that will help in terms of spending, in terms of salaries, but it isn't going to solve the problem in terms of teachers being able to get into home ownership.
What other concrete recommendations or observations would you like to share with our audience in this
final
minute?
And the interesting thing about school districts is that they have lots of land. They're often one of the largest landholders within a particular community. And school districts have the ability to be able to leverage that land in different ways or leverage their existing resources in different ways to partner to create different forms of housing. And there have been school districts, for instance, Roaring Fork and Eagle County is in the midst of doing some interesting things. So there are ways that school districts could actually do some things. There are also a whole variety of different mechanisms that the state and local communities can do in order to sort of help support folks getting into home ownership, whether or not it's reduced interest loans or all kinds of other financing arrangements.
My guest today has been Vince Scholes, Senior Policy Director of the Keystone Policy Center. Thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thank you.
The Dairy Arts Center in Boulder will host a celebration of West African drumming, dance, and storytelling this Saturday. The Aya Festival is organized by the Baobao Foundation. I dropped by one of their rehearsals ahead of the festival and spoke with festival director Ajay Abankwa. As part of the West African Drumming and Dance Festival that you're organizing, what's in store and who are coming to visit?
We have some of the national dancers from Ghana. Also, some of them live around here, so we invite some of them to come and join us. And also we have Mukumba group, which that's my troupe too, which we perform mostly around town, West African music and dance. And also there's a Brazilian samba. And we have like a Blue Moon dance company, which they're going to do a little bit of modern dance. And we have the Street Side Studio. Everyone knows Street Side Studio. They do all kinds of dance, but we're going to have some them do break dancing in between of what we're doing. And we are going to do some of the traditional African dancing and contemporary dancing, which I do choreograph some of them too.
Mm-hmm. You're originally from Ghana. You were a principal dancer, a choreographer for the National Ghana Dance Ensemble. What brought you to Colorado and what convinced you to stay?
I just got invited by CU a long time ago to help them with their religion studies, to see how the fetish dance goes, how they do fetish dance and how the fetish prays and how it go with Christianity. So I came and taught a little bit here. Then I end up being assistant director for the CU West African High Life Ensemble, which I have been doing for a long time. Then before I just started my own Baobao Festival. Then I teach at Metro University too for West African music and dance. But through the CU, that's why I was here. And now I'm married with my kids and we all live here, which is good. So
the name of your foundation has to do with a tradition of storytelling in Ghana. Can you explain what the backstory of that is?
So, good, yes, because the reason why we do Baobao Festival is like a place where we sit under a huge tree, because Baobao tree is huge, so we sit underneath and we tell stories and play music and dance. So that's the reason why we have this Baobao Festival, which you have like music and dancing and the storytelling in it. So all together, because the time I started doing this, I came here and I saw, oh, they are having a storytelling here. So only storytelling. They are having a dancing here. Only the band is playing here, only music. And like Ghana, that's not how we do. We combine everything together. So white people are in there, we enjoy that with the music and the style and the storytelling comes on and everything, because our therapy in Ghana is story. Because someone will tell a story and you think the person is talking to you, but the advice is there so you can get it from that.
And according to Rocky Mountain Ghana Council, Denver is home to around 8,000 people from Ghana. How does the work of the Baobao Foundation fit into the community of Ghanaians living in Colorado?
Even Saturday, they have like a festival in Denver, which a lot of Ghanaians were there. So I went there too to see what's going on, and for a celebration of Ghanaian festival called Homowo. Homowo is like festival which the Gans from the tribe called Gans, they get away from a wicked king in Nigeria, so they flew all the way to Ghana from Ile Ife. So they settle down, they need food to eat, so they got food with a corn, so they make food with, they call it Omowo. So that's a food they just eat, and that's a celebration. So they did that in Denver on Saturday, which was fun. So the food was like all over, which I was enjoying it.
And these festivals, like the one you just mentioned in Denver and the one that you're organizing for this Saturday at the Dairy Arts Center, what role does that play in maintaining a culture for your kids who are now growing up here?
Yeah, actually, my kids, they are doing good because it's hard for them to do the traditional dance what I'm doing, but they still love it, so they are going to do break dancing involved with it. So that's what it, because if you live somewhere, you do what they do, right? So they live here, they're into break dancing or dance, so they're still doing the dancing. Break dancing still come from Africa because it has some African influence in it and African movement in it, so I'm happy they are dancing. If you want, we can just go, some people are there, so we can hear a little bit of music, or you can talk to one or two people who have been there for a long time too.
We can, okay, go. Let's go do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
One of the dancers at the rehearsal is Elisa Garcia. Originally from Uruguay, she's an anthropologist by academic training and a musician and dancer in practice.
We are, three of us are doing a samba reggae piece. So samba reggae comes from Brazil, but it has a lot of African roots in the music and the dancing. It's originated in Bahia, Brazil, which is a part that has a lot of black people, a lot of descendants from Africa.
And what is your background in dance?
I have studied African dance, modern dance, ballet, belly dance, samba, Brazilian samba, both samba nupe, samba reggae. I just love to dance.
Baobel Foundation and AYA Festival Director Ajaya Bankwa says the two performances at the Dairy Arts Center this Saturday will be different from one another, with the matinee geared more towards kids and their families, and the evening one a longer performance.
One is 2 o'clock, and the other one is 7 o'clock. And it's going to be beautiful, and I'm trying to see when bring a kids or the adults, we're going to be like interact with everyone. So that's what it's going to be. It's going to be fun. So it's better to show up to see what exactly you are going to see.
More information about the AYA Festival is available online at thedairy.org. For KGNU, I'm Shannon Young. It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars with some ideas on how we can enhance our brain power. This is a time when many of us are taking on new projects, new schools. So how can we activate our consciousness, our memory, and our intelligence? Well, it's always good to have your life in order as much as possible. And I am a big believer in having a day planner so that you write down ideas, thoughts, appointments. Was it a potluck? Was it a birthday? Whatever. Don't miss out on the cool stuff. If you think it, ink it, rather than trying to hold everything into your head. And I'm more into day timers or day planners than just doing it on your phone, because don't we already do that a lot? Well, eating for brain power is very important. We can think of eating foods that look kind of like the brain. Cauliflower, walnuts, chia seeds. In Asian medicine, the brain is governed by the kidneys or the water element, and all those black colored foods like black rice, black beans, again, black chia seeds, black olives are great brain foods. We can also avoid things like allergens that might make us feel foggy. Eating things that you know are not good for you can make you feel foggy, soggy, and groggy. So get off of that. Chlorophyll is super important for helping the brain utilize oxygen better. And of course, good posture and breathing deeply is always a good idea. The color yellow is said to enhance cerebral stimulus. Using a yellow highlighter, or a yellow legal pad, or even wearing yellow on days when you have to be super on. But if it's more clairvoyance you're looking for, the violet ray is even better. So again, we could eat some purple foods like plums and elderberries, but getting full spectrum light. But here's a really simple trick for enhancing memory. Aromatherapy And rosemary in particular is awesome. Shakespeare said, there's rosemary for remembrance. Pray thee love remember. And here's a trick my kids used growing up, and so did my grandkids. While you're studying, smell rosemary essential oil. And then when you have to go take a test, put some on your hair, on your collar, or in your mustache, or on your wrist, and smell it, and it will help reactivate all that information you were taking in. Where are you putting your consciousness? What you choose to read and watch? I do think speaking multiple languages is a Jedi skill. We should keep learning our entire life. And remember, why are we doing this? For the highest good. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown, which is coming up right after these news headlines from the BBC.